No Federal Protections for the Arctic Grayling. I'm Christopher Allen.
And I'm Conrad Scheid. That's our top story tonight on Montana Evening Edition. Edward O'Brien talks with the co-director of the Montana Human Rights Network about KKK pamphlets seen in Haver. And Yellowstone Public Radio's Jackie Yamanaka tells us about a new refinery project proposed for the Billings area.
Federal wildlife officials say the Arctic grayling does not need special protections under the Endangered Species Act. The U.S. Fish, Wild, and Wildlife Service said today it reached the decision because of conservation efforts by private landowners and federal and state wildlife agencies to protect the fish. Montana Fish, Wildlife, and Parks spokesman Ron Ausheim says when conservation efforts began nearly 20 years ago, the fish was a threatened species.
As a result of that, we began some real serious efforts with staff and working with landowners and other agencies, and then the Department of Natural Resources and Conservation got involved. Fish and Wildlife Service, of course, was involved, and the idea was to conserve this particular population because it's the only state, we are the only state in the lower 48 in which the Arctic grayling are native, period. And this was the last stronghold, and a group of people got together, landowners remarkably agreed that, yeah, this is worth doing. We're not willing to give up our lifestyle, but we're willing to help. There are lots of interest, and certainly there'll be people looking at this decision and perhaps an appeal. But what the term they use is warranted but precluded, and that means they've got lots of species they're looking at, and this one isn't at the point where it needed to be listed immediately, that they could still hold off taking a harder look. And as a result, things kept happening down there. People kept working together. The habitat kept getting improved. Populations kept improving, and they said, hey, you know what? It's no longer warranted.
He says habitat quality, population trends, and genetic diversity are now stable for most grayling populations in the state. Conservation groups have filed complaints or sued the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service three times since 1991 to list the grayling as a threatened species. The most recent complaint occurred in 2009. Big Hole Watershed Committee Secretary Bill Kane has worked with landowners and federal and state officials to preserve the grayling for 25 years. As a founding member, Kane says the population improvement in the last few years is the result of decades of hard work.
And in terms of the Big Hole, it's a whole range of efforts that have been taken, such as the Big Hole Watershed Committee Drought Management Plan, that is designed in drought years to leave more water in the rivers, thanks to the ranchers who voluntarily give up that water, to sportsmen who voluntarily give up fishing in order not to stress the fish. And it involves a whole range of rehabilitation efforts in terms of restoring the connectivity of the river after 100 years of irrigation practices that were not understood in the early years. All these efforts are really beginning to pay dividends now.
The Missouri River system upstream of Great Falls holds the only North American Arctic grayling population outside Canada and Alaska. The fish are related to trout and known for their colorful, sail-like dorsal fin.
In other news from around the state, Haver residents say leaflets apparently from the Ku Klux Klan appeared at homes in parts of the city, including one where many Native Americans live. The Haver Daily News reports the leaflets bear the insignia of the United Klans of America and say, quote, neighborhood watch, you can sleep well tonight knowing the UKA is awake, unquote. They were placed in baggies and distributed over the weekend. These pamphlets have the attention of Helena-based Montana Human Rights Network, which, among other things, monitors hate group activities in Montana. Co-director Rachel Carol Rivas tells Edward O'Brien that the Ku Klux Klan continues to be an active entity in the United States, weighing in on anti-immigration policies in particular.
The KKK has engaged in more sort of policy-type discussions rather than some of the more blatant things that we think about, like the cross-burnings of the KKK of the past. And so, you know, when they engage in those policy discussions, they're able to kind of pull these very marginal ideas of white supremacism into a little bit more mainstream conversations. And I think that's what I mean when I say they're just a slightly more polished than we think of them in the past. The more blatant activities do still exist, and we haven't seen as many of those in Montana, but some of the activities of the Klan of the past do still happen, especially in the American South.
What's the network's take on this pamphleteering in Haver by the Klan? Did you see this coming, or did it come as a surprise?
Well, it's very interesting because leafleting with Klan labeling is something that has happened on and off in Montana over the last few years particularly, and it always seems to sort of come out of nowhere. Sometimes we're able to track it to an activist, but often it's pretty unlabeled on who it's coming from and unclear if it's someone in Montana or someone just driving through. Regardless, it's always concerning because it makes people feel unwelcome and feel afraid, and it creates fear and resentment over certain types of people in our community. So regardless of where it comes from or who, it's still quite a problem and very concerning to us.
Not the first time we've heard from John Abar. He wanted to run for office in the past, right?
Correct, yep. And John Abar has been a pretty vocal member of the Klan in Montana and has often spoke, you know, for them when these sort of things happen. I think John Abar is a good example of someone who tries to make his Klan ideas and his white supremacist ideas seem a little bit more acceptable, but very clearly they are not the values of majority of Montanans.
Why should this be concerning? These pamphlets say, neighborhood watch, you can sleep well tonight knowing the UKA is awake. Is that scary, or is that just free speech?
Well, it's absolutely free speech, but it's still scary, and I think things can be both. And in this case, that's, I think, exactly what it is. It's scary because it makes certain people in our communities feel unwelcome and afraid, and that is not, I don't think, the values of Montanans. We want people to feel welcome here. We want people to be able to engage fully in their communities, and these sort of things just breed sort of hate and resentment of certain groups of people.
Have you been in touch with anyone in Haver who's seen these pamphlets?
Yes, I've been in touch with some of our members in Haver who were concerned, and we are a membership organization, and we exist because people are able to get a hold of us and say, hey, what's going on? Can you tell me more about this? And, you know, what can we do? And I think that the most important thing to know is that people should speak out, and we hope our public officials speak out about it, and that, you know, there is a collective voice saying that this isn't acceptable and that these flyers don't stand for what Montanans, the people of Haver, believe in and want, so that the fear that they do incite is hopefully dwindled by the response from the community.
Does it benefit for community leaders to speak out? Or if should the mayor say, you know, if I talk about this more, then Haver is going to get a rap for being some sort of a racist haven on the national scale?
I think by speaking out against it from public officials, community leaders, it actually creates the opposite. It says that, no, this is an anomaly that is not what our community stands for. So I think it's very important to stand up against it. And the history of activism in Montana has shown that we can really say that, hey, there are these things that happen in our state with white supremacist organizing, but the response has generally and really loudly been that it's not what Montanans stand for, and this isn't a place for hate.
So then what now?
I think that for the Human Rights Network, we'll continue to monitor to see if, you know, this was a sort of one-shot random thing or if there really is some more active organizing going on, again, in Montana with the KKK. But I think most importantly, people pay attention, that they speak up against it, and that we continue to make proactive policies that promote welcoming communities so that these sort of flyers are less likely to appear because people already know ahead of time that that's not, they aren't going to receive a good response from the communities of Montana.
Am I being paranoid here, or is there any coincidence that these pamphlets are being dropped during what's happening in Missouri?
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't necessarily draw a connection with what's happening in Missouri in these particular flyers, but I do think it's very important to note that issues of race and how those affect everything from everyday interactions of community members to interaction with law enforcement leaders, our institutions, is still very much a conversation that needs to be had in the U.S. and in Montana. And what's happening in Ferguson is clearly an example of the fact that there are still racism that exists in our communities, and that people feel that very deeply, and there needs to be a response to those things.
Rachel Carol Rivas of the Montana Human Rights Network, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you so much for calling.
A Haver businessman plans to plead guilty to charges that his company overbilled the Chippewa Cree tribe by $116,000 to recover money used to pay off tribal officials who awarded a contract to demolish the reservation's health center. In court documents filed yesterday, an attorney for Shad Houston said the former Haver school board member will also plead guilty to giving the tribal chairman a $25,000 SUV as a, quote, reward, end quote, for past business transactions. In a change of plea motion, Houston's attorney says that Houston reached a plea agreement with federal prosecutors in a long-running corruption case on the Rocky Boys Indian Reservation. Houston plans to plead guilty to theft from an Indian tribal government, bribery of an agent of a program receiving federal funds, and failure to file a cash transaction.
Yellowstone County officials welcomed a proposed refinery project near Billings. The county commissioners listened to a presentation today on the project and offered to help Quantum Energy get started with its proposed new refinery in the Billings area. Jackie Yamanaka reports.
The partners are Quantum Energy Incorporated and Bilfinger Westcon Incorporated. The partners want to build five so-called micro-refineries in Montana and North Dakota. In Montana, the companies have chosen the Billings area, Baker, and Fairview. The proposed refineries would process crude from the Bakken and capture CO2 to be used to enhance oil field recovery. Bill Bradley is a project director for Bilfinger.
One of the benefits of this is we're starting with state-of-the-art design, where a lot of refineries that are expanding, they're bringing up the standard. We're starting at the top of the standards.
Besides refining diesel for local sale, he says the plant would also strip out the volatile compounds from the Bakken crude. Backers say that makes it a clean energy project. It's also been dubbed a micro-refinery because they would not process more than 20,000 barrels of oil a day.
The 20,000 barrel per day cap is based on emissions. That keeps it under the federal guidelines. It allows the state of Montana to approve their processes. And so it creates a ceiling. We're not going to, you know, expand that ceiling. We'll stay at the federal, the state level.
Bradley says the permits are being prepared now to be submitted to the Montana Departments of Environmental Quality and Natural Resources and Conservation. Because of the refinery's small size, he said, it would not need review by the Federal Environmental Protection Agency. When Yellowstone County commissioners asked company officials what the company needed, representatives said help with the permitting process in Montana. Bradley says a similar project is scheduled to open in Dickinson, North Dakota in late December or early January. And he says Montana historically has a problem when it comes to permitting such projects. This was just a presentation before the Yellowstone County Commission and not a hearing. But always at the end of the regular weekly meeting, commissioners take public comment on county business. Deb Fisher of Billings was the only one who spoke, and she's concerned about the refinery project, namely the volatile nature of Bakken crude, as well as any impacts on public health.
The fact that they're trying to limit emissions is great, but we do already have three refineries in Billings. And I raised a kid who has asthma, and she still has it. I mean, she's 29 now, and still has to carry an inhaler wherever she runs.
Officials with the refinery project expect to announce a Yellowstone County location later this week. The timetable calls for groundbreaking in mid to late spring. Andrew Kasich is the chief executive of Quantum. He says the project would create up to 600 construction jobs with up to 150 permanent employees, with the lowest employee earning at least $100,000 a year. Jackie Yamanaka, YPR News.
State Department of Transportation officials say a massive piece of refinery equipment bound for Great Falls crossed into Montana from Idaho early this morning. The load, which is 21 feet wide and nearly 17 feet tall, stopped about 0.3 miles from the Idaho border on Montana Highway 200. The load will travel north nearly to Troy and then through Libby, Kalispell, north to Whitefish, west to Columbia Falls, and then south to Big Fork. The load will continue south through the Swan Valley and return to Montana 200, where it will continue through Lincoln to the Calumet Refinery in Great Falls. The load's maximum weight, including up to 2 pull trucks and 3 push trucks, is more than 1 million pounds, and its maximum length is just over 400 feet. The hydro cracker is the first of 3 large loads destined for the Calumet Refinery. It is being moved by Big Crane and Rigging Company, which picked up the load at the port of Lewiston in Idaho last week. Protesters met the load in Moscow and Sandpoint, but Williams said he hadn't heard any talk of protests in Montana. The load can only travel at night. Motorists can expect delays of up to 10 minutes.
Two suspects in the death of a man at a southwestern Montana campground have been returned to Beaverhead County to face charges. County Attorney Jed Fitch says 29-year-old Christopher Lee Stiles was charged with deliberate homicide, while 49-year-old Sandra Leanne Cantrell was charged with accountability to deliberate homicide in the death of Mark Robert Mullen of Butte. Both were also charged in district court today with stealing Mullen's motorhome and tampering with evidence. They have not entered pleas, and bail was set at $500,000 each. Fitch says he must have the charges filed in district court by September 11th. Mullen's body was found near a campground about 8 miles west of Wise River on August 9th. Officials have not said how he died. Stiles and Cantrell were arrested in Missoula on August 12th.
And now for weather. Scattered showers and thunderstorms are expected across our listening area tonight, with lows in the mid-40s to upper 50s. More storms and showers are likely tomorrow, along with cloud cover for most of Montana. Highs in the mid-70s to lower 80s. And now for the editorial comments of Susan Haypatrick.
Robin Williams' suicide has rocked the nation. How could someone with such talent, so universally beloved, not see life as worth living? Closer to home, too many of us in western Montana have lost family, friends, and colleagues to suicide. Their deaths leave a hole in our hearts and in the fabric of our community. As we grieve the loss of a loved one to suicide, we agonize over whether we missed warning signs, and we ask ourselves what more we could have done. Sadly, suicide in Montana is not a new problem. For decades, since statistics were first collected, our state has been in the top five nationally for suicide. Currently, Missoula County has a higher suicide rate than the rest of Montana. Although much of the focus on prevention is geared to teens, suicide in Montana is most prevalent among adults, with the highest rate among men ages 55 to 64. It is especially high among Native Americans. There are many reasons for Montana's high rate of suicide, including too little access to mental health care, too easy access to lethal means — guns are used in 64% of all suicides in Montana — and a rural culture of rugged individualism that can frown on seeking help for family, personal, or work problems. We must stem this troubling tide. Suicide is a public health crisis with tragic consequences for our community. We must shine a light on this dark problem. We must see ourselves as part of the solution. No matter our background, age, ethnicity, experience, or vocation, whether we are healthcare professionals, social workers, clergy, the media, or ordinary citizens, whether we work with teens or adults or senior citizens or veterans, preventing suicide is everybody's business. Suicide is one of the most preventable forms of death. Research shows that most people with thoughts of suicide don't truly want to die, but see no other way to escape their pain. With help, they can make the decision to stay alive. Effective prevention strategies and intervention programs are available, but too few people are aware of them. We must convey and teach these to the broadest audience possible. Everybody can be an effective gatekeeper where suicide is concerned. Toward that end, the Missoula City County Health Department, United Way of Missoula County, the Institute for Educational Research and Service at the University of Montana, and LivingWorks Education, a suicide intervention training company, are spearheading the new Western Montana Suicide Prevention Initiative. Our mission is to reduce the number of suicides and suicide attempts in Missoula County through collaborative efforts that promote, support, and increase awareness of suicide suicide prevention, intervention, and recovery. Our work is rooted in the belief that by bringing diverse public, private, and nonprofit stakeholders together and fully aligning community resources into an effective force for change, we can make our community suicide safer. A first step toward that goal is Not Alone, a Missoula Suicide Prevention Summit. On Tuesday, September 9, community members wishing to be part of broad-based efforts to prevent suicide will gather at the University of Montana to hear from State Suicide Prevention Coordinator Carl Roston, Missoula City County Health Department Suicide Prevention Coordinator Christy Scheel, and psychologist Sally Spencer Thomas, a national expert on suicide prevention whose brother's death by suicide inspires her work. Breakout sessions at this free summit will include training, also free, in recognition of National Suicide Prevention Week, in effective suicide prevention and intervention, survivor support for those grieving the death of a loved one to suicide, suicide prevention for veterans, prevention strategies and approaches for workplaces, schools, and communities, and guidance in self-care and resilience, including addressing the secondary trauma experienced by those who support and work with people at risk of suicide. Also, because certain kind of news coverage can increase the likelihood of suicide among vulnerable people, the summit will include a session on media guidelines for covering suicide. If you're a radio, TV, or print journalist anywhere in Montana, if you blog or otherwise maintain a strong social media presence, this session is for you. There is room at the summit for everyone who wishes to shine a light of hope on this tragic subject. For registration information, email info@missoulaunitedway.org. And remember, you are not alone. Emergency help for those with thoughts of suicide is available through the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline, 800-273-TALK, 800-273-8255. Preventing suicide is everybody's business. Please join us in making it yours. I'm Susan Haypatrick, CEO of United Way of Missoula County. Thanks for listening.
Susan Haypatrick is one of several commentators on Montana Evening Edition. The views expressed don't necessarily represent those of this station. If you have a comment, you can send it via our webpage at mtpr.org or on Montana Public Radio's Facebook page. Montana Evening Edition is also archived on our website. I'm Conrad Scheib.
And I'm Christopher Allen. Thanks for listening, and please join Edward O'Brien tomorrow at 7, 8, and 8:30 for Montana Morning News.